Thank you very much, Francois, for this beautiful conference and for inviting me to speak here. Today I'm speaking on some joint work with Pierre Kalka on variance asymptotics and scaling limits for Gaussian polytopes. So first, let's start with a few historical remarks. So random polytopes, you start with random points. And with these random points, you consider the convex hull of the random points. And the extreme points of the convex hull are called vertices. 150 years ago, Sylvester asked the problem, or posed the problem, suppose you have four points supported in a mother body K, let K4 be the convex hull of these four points. So the convex hull of a four-point set might have four vertices or it might have three vertices. But what's the expected number of vertices of the convex hull of a four-point set? Well, he asked this problem almost 150 years ago to the day and published his results in the Educational Times. So it turns out that the answer depends a lot upon the mother body that supports the four points, or that holds the four points. If the mother body is a triangle, then the expected number of vertices in the convex hull is 11/3. So Sylvester showed this 150 years ago. On the other hand, if the mother body is a unit ball, then the expected number of vertices in the convex hull is also a number between 3 and 4, but works out to be this rather complicated number, improved by Woolhouse. If K, the mother body, is a rectangle, then the expected number of points in the convex hull of a four-point set, so these are four points put down uniformly on a rectangle. Well, that's also a number between 3 and 4, and it's 133 over 36. So, famous results going back almost 150 years. Since that time, a lot of mathematicians have considered this convex hull problem, and I can't mention all the names, but a few of the more prominent names consist of Blaschke and Crofton and Dahlin and Ephron and so forth. So what happens in dimensions bigger than 2? So in dimensions 3 and higher, one can ask the same problem. Now put down n points uniformly at random in some mother body. Perhaps the mother body is the unit ball BD. What's the expected number of vertices of the convex hull of n points put down uniformly at random in the unit ball? And this is not an easy problem. In fact, the expected number of vertices works out to be something rather complicated, this problem has been considered by Buchta and Alfentranger, among others. When the mother body is a three-dimensional rectangle, the expected number of vertices in the convex hull of a five-point set, so looking at 5 points put down uniformly at random on a rectangular solid, the expected number of vertices is this complicated difference of two, fractions. That there's no intuition for where this comes from. And if the mother body supporting the uniform points is a tetrahedron in three dimensions, then the expected number of vertices of the convex hull has a formula. There is a closed form expression for it. And, well, it takes the better part of half of a page to write down this closed form expression. So it's not trivial. So, since it's very difficult to find exact expected values of number of vertices of convex hulls, one can ask about inequalities and how to relate convex hulls from points coming from different mother bodies. So for example, suppose K is some compact convex set in R2. So we're just in the plane now. And suppose you have just 4 points on this compact set K. What's the expected number of vertices on an arbitrary of a convex hull coming of 4 points on a arbitrary compact convex set? Well, it turns out that it's upper bounded. Oops. So, looking for the pointer. So it's upper bounded by the number of vertices of on the convex hull of a 4-point set in the ball, that's B2, and lower bounded by the number of vertices on a 4-point set in a triangle. So in other words, the triangle and disk are extremal when the input is a 4-point set. So the expected number of vertices of the convex hull of a 4-point set is minimized and maximized by triangles and balls. And nope, it's a triangle, and the number of vertices is preserved under affine transformations. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this result stood in 1917, and it was only in 1991 that this result was upgraded to show that it holds for all endpoint sets. That's to say that the triangle and ball are extremal for input consisting of any cardinality, 4 and higher. So this is an extremal property of the simplex and also the ball, but proving that this is true in higher dimensions seems to be a very difficult problem and is open, and is in fact related to the slicing problem in convex geometry. So the solution of one would provide a solution of the other, in fact. Okay, so the convex hull problem has been around for many years, and there are some very innocent-looking and even surprising questions in the study of convex hulls. So, for example, one might expect that the expected vertex count of a convex hull is monotone in the input size. One might expect that as you increase the number of IID points, that the expected number of vertices in the convex hull should increase. But proving this very natural conjecture is not so easy. And it's still open. And one might also expect, so that's the first inequality, one might also expect that if you have two compact convex sets, K and L, and if K is a subset of L, then one might expect that the volume of the convex set formed by the endpoints in the smaller set is upper bounded by the expected volume of the convex hull of the endpoints on the larger set. So one might expect that volumes increase as you enlarge the mother body supporting the points. Right? So it's a very natural conjecture. And in fact, Rademacher has showed that this is actually false, surprisingly. So even if the input size n consists of d plus 1 points, as long as you're in dimension 4 or higher, this inequality breaks down. And he has counterexamples showing that the expected volume of the convex hull does not grow as you increase the size of the mother body. On the other hand, this is true in dimensions 2 and 3. So there are some very surprising and innocent-looking questions in the study of convex hulls on even just finite point sets. Okay, so today we're going to talk about just the number of vertices of convex hulls, but also other statistics of convex hulls, such as volumes, of convex hulls, and also the number of edges in the convex hull on an IID point set. And in general, the L-phase function, which is the number of L-faces of the on the convex hull of a random polytope. So these statistics are important in the study of random polytopes. And finally, the volume is another statistic of interest. So what can we say about these statistics? And as I've already showed you, when the input size n is finite, it's pretty difficult to say anything, to say much. We don't have a lot of information. So it's been pretty difficult to derive explicit formulas for statistics of convex hulls on finite point sets. And therefore, the investigation has focused on the limit behavior of statistics of convex hulls as the input size goes to infinity. Okay, so if the body hosting the points, which we're calling K, is compact and convex, then the expected L phase functional of the random convex hull this goes off to infinity, not necessarily monotone, but it goes off to infinity. Turns out the shape of the boundary of the body hosting the points determines the asymptotics of the L phase and volume functionals. And an important parameter which governs the behavior of this growth is the so-called affine surface area, which is given by the integral of the Gaussian curvature to the 1 over d plus 1. So the affine surface area is a parameter which is invariant under volume-preserving affine transformations. So the shape of the boundary determines the order of magnitude of the growth of the volume functional and the L-phase functionals. All right, so an old result going back 50 years to Renyi and Zulanki shows that in dimension 2, if the boundary of the mother body is smooth, then the expected number of vertices in the convex hull scales like n to the 1/3 and converges to some constant multiple of the affine surface area. This is a old result which has stimulated a lot of investigation in the last 50 years. Now, Matthias Reisner showed in 2005 that this result of Renyi and Zulanki can be upgraded and generalized so that in any dimension and for any L phase functional, the expected number of L phases in the convex hull of this IID point set scales like n to the d minus 1 over d plus 1, and it converges to some constant multiple of the affine surface area. All right, so not an easy result. The scaling by n to the d minus 1 over d plus 1 is possibly a little unusual, and I will motivate it in a few minutes. But it's not clear that the scaling should involve this strange n to the d minus 1 over d plus 1. Where does that come from? And I will explain this in a few minutes. Okay, so as long as the boundary is of class C2, one has polynomial scaling in n. But what about if the mother body is itself a convex polytope, for example, a tetrahedron or a square or whatever? In this case, one gets logarithmic scaling. The number of vertices in the convex hull, on average, scales like log n to the power d minus 1. So, and so does the L-phase functional. And in fact, the expected L-phase functional converges to a constant multiple of the number of flags in the mother body. So what is a flag? A flag is just an increasing, it's a maximal chain of faces where each entry is a subface of the next in the chain. So a flag consists of first a vertex, then an edge, then a two-face and a three-face and so forth. This is a flag. And the number of flags of the... Each flag contributes, on average, log n vertices. That's what this is saying. This is a non-trivial result of Matthias Reitzner. And then it's also known that if you have the convex hull of n IID standard normal random variables on RD, then the L-phase functional scales like the square root of log n to the power d minus 1. And this is actually to be expected, because one knows that in a Gaussian sample, the number of extreme points, or the extreme points, concentrate they're at a distance roughly square root log n from the origin, up to some multiple. And therefore, the number of extreme points should be proportional to the surface area of a sphere of radius square root log n. And that's what this result confirms. All right. So, what about central limit theorems? So suppose that you have some statistic of a convex hull, of a random convex hull, and call that statistic Zn. So Zn could be either the volume of the convex hull or the L-phase functional or even an intrinsic volume. Well, over the years, a lot of work has been done by various authors, some of whom are in the audience, show that this statistic satisfies a central limit theorem, so that statistic Zn, when it's centered around its expectation and scaled by the square root of the variance, converges to a standard normal. So phi here is the standard normal distribution. In dimension 2, when d is 2, and the statistic is the number of vertices of the convex hull, this result was proved, and the mother body is a polygon, this central limit was shown by Grunebaum in 1988. So that is only for the case d equals 2, and only for polygons. In dimension 2, when the mother body is the ball, and the statistic is the volume of the convex hull, then the central limit theorem was shown by Singh in 1994. What about in general? So for general smooth sets in RD, Matthias Reitzner showed that if the statistic is either the volume or the L-phase functional, then again it satisfies the central limit theorem with a rate of convergence. And Van Vu showed sharp concentration estimates for this statistic, Zn. So how would you show a central limit theorem for statistics of convex hulls? How does it go? What's the idea? And the idea first is to show that the convex hull, the boundary of the convex hull, concentrates in some annulus. So for example, if the IID points are supported by the unit ball, then one can show that the boundary of the convex hull concentrates in a thin annulus, which is close to the unit sphere. And then one takes this thin annulus and decomposes it, essentially partitions it into a small number of sets, and shows that the behavior of the convex hull is asymptotically independent on these sets as the sets get far from each other. So this is the idea of dependency graphs, or M-dependence, and Reitzner and Van Vu and Barani have used this method to prove central limit theorems for statistics of convex hulls. So once again, they're showing that the boundary of the convex hull concentrates in a thin annulus. the thin annulus is decomposed into very small sets whose diameter depends upon the input size n, and whose diameter is going to zero. And they show that the behavior of the convex hull on these small sets becomes asymptotically independent as the small sets are far from each other. So this is not the method of stabilization. And the reason is that the diameter of these sets, which form the partition of the annulus, is dependent upon the input size, n. So it's not stabilization. So I'll say more about this in a few minutes. Okay, so that's how you would prove the central limit theorem for general smooth sets in d dimensions. Barani and Vu used a similar technique to show a central limit theorem for statistics of Gaussian polytopes. And here again, they showed that the Gaussian polytope has a boundary which concentrates around some deterministic sphere, and then it concentrates in some annulus of deterministic width, and they partitioned the annulus into small sets and again showed that the behavior of the convex hull on the partitioning sets of this annulus becomes independent as the sets get far from each other. All right, and then finally for polytopes in RD, Barani and Reissner showed a central limit theorem for statistics of such polytopes. Okay, now the central limit theorem uses dependency graphs, as I indicated, but it also requires variance lower bounds on your statistic of interest. In order to use the Stein method, one needs variance lower bounds. And they obtained these variance lower bounds. But they weren't able to, their methods were not able to give limiting variances of these statistics. And so the question arose more than 20 years ago, what is the limiting variance of statistics of convex hulls? So what's the limiting variance of the volume or the L-phase functional or whatever? For central limit theorems, you don't need limiting variances, you just need lower bounds on variances. All right. Well, I should point out that in the special case, when you're dimension 2 and K is the unit disk or a polytope or polygon in R2, then the limiting variance, in this case, there is a formula for the limiting variance. But other than that, not known. Okay, so here we have now a formula for the limiting variance when the statistic of interest is the L-phase functional on a random polytope built on points in a mother body whose boundary is of class C3. So take a mother body K whose boundary is of class C3, then the limiting variance of the L-phase functional on Kn scales like n to the d minus 1 over d plus 1. It scales in the same way as the expectation scales. And it converges to this constant multiple of the affine surface area. So here, VLD at the very end is some constant V depending upon L and the dimension. On the other hand, if Kn is a Gaussian polytope, then limiting variance scales like log n to the d minus 1 over 2. So it scales in the same way as the expectation asymptotic scale. And here, little v is a constant depending upon L and d. So this first result here was shown in the special case that K is the unit ball. It was shown in the special case, in that special case, by Thomas Schreiber, Pierre Kalka, and myself. And then later on, Pierre and I upgraded this to show that it holds really whenever the mother body has a boundary of class C3. And more recently, Pierre and I showed this second result where the limiting variance scales by log n to the d minus 1 over 2 and converges to a limiting constant which has a closed form expression. I'll say more about this in a few minutes. So here are limiting variance asymptotics. Now take the boundary of the convex hull of an IID point set. And what is its scaling limit? What does it converge to? I'm going to come back to variance asymptotics in a few minutes, but let's look at the boundary of a convex hull. And what can we say? The boundary of the convex hull is an interface. It's a random interface. And after scaling, does this random interface converge to something? All right, so here's one way to look at the problem, which has turned out to be very productive. Here's the unit ball. Consider an endpoint set in the unit ball. For each point, for example, for the point x naught, we consider a ball centered at x naught over 2 of radius x naught over 2. So you do this for each point. Well, it turns out that these balls characterize the extreme points in the following sense, that the ball here of centered at x naught over 2, of radius x naught over 2, of radius more x naught over 2, if this ball has the property that it's not covered by the union of the other balls, then the point x naught is extreme. So a point is extreme if and only if this ball, which I call a characterizing ball, is not covered by the union of the other characterizing balls. So I'm calling it a characterizing ball because it can be used to characterize when a point is extreme. Now, if we're to do a scaling limit of the convex hull of the boundary of an endpoint set, this scaling limit should ideally preserve this characterizing ball property. In other words, how are we going to do that? How would that happen? So at the point x naught, and if x naught is close to the boundary, notice that the ball has a parabolic behavior with respect to the unit sphere. So near x naught, and if x naught is close to the boundary, then the balls have locally parabolic boundaries with respect to polar coordinates. And therefore, any reasonable scaling should preserve this property. We want to preserve this characterizing ball property under a scaling transform. And to preserve this property means that we need not a linear transform, but a parabolic transform. And the parabolic transform will have the nice property that the scaling in the radial direction will be the square of the scaling in the angular direction with respect to polar coordinates. All right, so let's look at a picture. So I'm starting now just in dimension 2. I'm considering n points in the unit disk. Now, there's a little typo here. We have n points, xi, n points uniform in the unit disk. Now I claim that there exists a scaling transform, T, which depends upon the sample size n, such that the transform Tn takes this IID point set into a rate 1 Poisson point process in the upper half plane. So there's two things happening in this picture. One is that the points in the unit ball are transformed to the upper half plane, and also we're taking a limit as n goes to infinity. So the picture on the right shows the limit as n goes to infinity after applying the scaling transform. So the claim is that there exists this transform Tn having this property. All right, well, that's easy to believe. All right, but what else? All right. So the scaling limit of the IID point set uniform in the unit disk under the transform Tn goes to this rate 1 Poisson point process on the upper half plane. Okay, now what about these characterizing balls? Look at the characterizing balls in the unit disk. We want this transform to preserve the scale, the characterizing balls. We want to design a scaling transform T, depending upon the input size, to preserve these characterizing balls. Well, here's what happens. The characterizing balls transform to characterizing paraboloids. So, the characterizing balls transform to characterizing paraboloids. What is a characterizing paraboloid? It's the analog of the characterizing balls. So, if a paraboloid is not covered by the union of the other paraboloids in the right-hand picture, then the apex of that paraboloid corresponds to the transformed image of an extreme point in the left-hand picture. So once again, the paraboloids in the right-hand picture have apices. If the paraboloid is in the right-hand picture is not covered by the union of the other paraboloids, that means that the apex of that paraboloid, which is not covered, corresponds to an extreme point in the left-hand picture. So we've, instead of looking at characterizing balls, we're now looking at characterizing paraboloids in the upper half plane. All right. So the characterizing balls are mapped to characterizing parabolas or paraboloids. Now, it turns out that the geometry of the paraboloids is much easier to work with than the geometry of the balls. And it's actually easier to see and to understand when a paraboloid in the right-hand picture is covered by the union of the other paraboloids. That's easier to understand. Okay, moreover, the scaling limit of the vertices of the convex hull in the limit as n goes to infinity converges to a thinned Poisson point process in the right-hand picture. And the thinned Poisson point process is a dependent thinning. What is the thinning exactly? You start with the Poisson points of rate 1, and you thin them out. How do you thin them? You put a parabola at each apex, or at each point. So you put a parabola whose apex is at that point. And if that parabola is not covered by the union of the other paraboloids, then you retain that point in the thinning. If the paraboloid is covered, you get rid of that point. So this gives you a thinning of the Poisson points. And that thinning is the limit of the extreme points in the convex hull. That's the claim. Now what about the scaling limit of the boundary of the convex hull? So here's the boundary. I've tried to draw it in green. So you start with ID points in the unit disk. The boundary is in green, and under this transform Tn, I claim that the boundary of the convex hull converges to this green sequence of green dashes here of inverted paraboloids. Now, this sequence of inverted paraboloids can be obtained in two ways. One of them is simply to look at the intersection of two up parabolas, and at that intersection point, you put the apex of a down parabola. That gives you the green parabolas. A second way to construct this festoon of inverted green parabolas is to take your Poisson points and to push these inverted parabolas, y equals minus 1/2 x squared, push them up from below until they hit the Poisson points, and then as soon as they hit the Poisson points, you stop. So it looks something like this. Here are the Poisson points. Take parabolas y equals minus 1/2 x squared. You push them up from below. And you do this in the maximal sense, so that you push them until they hit points, the Poisson points. And when they hit, you stop. So and this gives you this inverted festoon of parabolas, which I call the Burger's festoon. I'll say this will be... All right. So the boundary of the convex hull transforms to this inverted festoon of parabolas. All right. So what is this transform that does the job? The transform T depends upon N, and it's constructed using the exponential map. So the exponential map, well, just to review, it goes as follows. Consider the tangent space to the unit sphere at the north pole. The exponential map takes a vector in that tangent space, a vector v, and maps it to a point on the unit sphere lying at the end of a geodesic of length norm of v and starting at the north pole and having direction v. So here is the scaling transform that does the job. Remember, it needs to be parabolic. What happens in the radial direction has to be the square of the scaling in the angular direction. And therefore, so the transform that does the job is as follows. Consider the inverse exponential map in the direction, so given a point x in the unit ball, we consider the inverse exponential map of the unit vector in the direction of x, and scale that by n to the 1 over d plus 1. So that's the angular scaling. The radial scaling has to be the square of that. So that explains the n to the 2 over d plus 1. But there are many ways to construct a transform such that the radial scale is the square of the angular scale. Why should it be n to the 1 over d plus 1, n to the 2 over d plus 1? Well, you want to design this transform T so that it takes points in the unit ball and maps them to points in the product space RD minus 1 cross R, which so that you see essentially one point per unit volume in the image. So under that constraint, and under the constraint that the radial scale is the square of the angular scale, you're forced more or less to choose this transform. Okay, now in the previous pictures I showed what happens when n goes to infinity. But what happens for a fixed n? What does the transform do for a fixed n? Well, for a fixed n, notice that it takes a point in the ball and sends it to a point in RD minus 1 cross R, whose abscissa is at most, has magnitude at most, n to the 1 over d plus 1. So for a fixed n, Tn carries the unit ball to a subset of the product space where the points in the product space have abscissa at most n to the 1 over d plus 1. And it takes these characterizing balls into, for fixed n, into not parabolas, but quasi-parabolas. So for fixed n, we have a picture that looks something like this. We have quasi-parabolas living over a subset of rd minus 1 of diameter n to the 1 over d plus 1. And the number of extreme points for fixed n should be proportional to the number of paraboloids having the property that they're not covered by the union of the other paraboloids. And that number should be proportional to the surface area or the volume of this set which carries the parabolas. And this is how you get the scaling n to the d minus 1 over d plus 1. That's how I like to think about it. Okay, so in other words, the expected number of extreme points in the original picture is the cardinality of the extreme points in this picture here, which I just said behaves like the volume of the set carrying these parabolas. All right. So what about Gaussian polytopes, finally? So here is a realization of a Gaussian sample. And there's the convex hull of a Gaussian sample. The extreme points in the Gaussian sample are roughly at a distance Rn from the origin, where Rn looks like the square root of 2 log n up to some correction terms. So let's do the same thing for the Gaussian sample that we did for the uniform sample. And so we start with n Gaussian points in the plane. The convex hull is concentrated around the boundary of a circle magnified by this scaling factor Rn, where Rn looks like roughly square root 2 log n. Now we're going to do the same thing in this picture that we did in the uniform case. We're going to look at the characterizing balls. First, let's forget about the characterizing balls. So I claim that there exists a transform T depending on the input size, n, which carries this Gaussian sample into a sample in the product space R cross R. But now it's not a homogeneous Poisson point process, it's a Poisson point process that's non-homogeneous and has exponentially increasing intensity, e to the h. So h is the height coordinate of a point. So I claim that there exists this transform which carries the Gaussian sample to this non-homogeneous Poisson point process. And now let's look at the characterizing balls. The characterizing balls are carried, once again, to characterizing paraboloids, just as before. And the scaling limit of the extreme points in the Gaussian sample now converges to a thinned, non-homogeneous Poisson point process. So we have a Poisson point process in the right-hand on the right-hand side. We thin it out using the same thinning mechanism, namely, at each point we put the apex of a parabola, and if that parabola is not covered, if the epigraph of that parabola is not covered by the epigraphs of the other parabolas, then we keep that point. Otherwise, we delete the point. It's a thinning. So we get that the scaling of the extreme points converges to this thinned non-homogeneous Poisson point process, and the boundary of the convex hull converges to this festoon of inverted parabolas, just as in the case of the uniform points. But now the festoon of parabolas is supported by a non-homogeneous Poisson point process. All right. Now, looking at the boundary of the union of the characterizing sets, that's the blue arc, notice that that boundary gets carried under the transformation Tn to the graph of this function f in the scaling limit. And notice the scaling limit of the boundary of the convex hull is this Burger's festoon of parabolic surfaces, but it's the same festoon that we encountered in the uniform case, except now it's carried by a non-homogeneous Poisson point process. And on the other hand, the boundary of the union of the characterizing balls gets transformed to this to the graph of this function f, and notice that f prime has this sawtooth behavior. And what it's saying, or what it's showing here, is that the graph of the derivative of the support function of the convex hull converges after rescaling to this sawtooth function f prime. And in particular, notice that how is this function f constructed? If you look carefully at it, you will see that if you look at the zeros of f prime, the distance between the zeros of f prime corresponds to the rescaled angular distance between consecutive extreme points in the convex hull. So the rescaled angular distance between consecutive extreme points in the convex hull converges to the distance between the zeros of this sawtooth function f prime. All right, so what is the transform that does the job? As before, we can construct and design this nice transformation T. For each n, we construct Tn. And as before, the scaling in the angular direction must, or the scaling in the radial direction has to be the square of the scaling in the angular direction. And we also want to design it so that we see roughly 1 point per unit volume after scaling. So that more or less forces us to choose this transform Tn given here. All right. So now what happens for fixed n? Well, notice that for fixed n, it's easy to see that for fixed n, this transform Tn carries points in the original picture to points in the rescaled picture, which have a magnitude at most Rn. And therefore, in the rescaled picture, we get up to some correction factors, we get a picture that looks like this. We have paraboloids with apices having abscissa supported in a rectangle of dimensions roughly square root 2 log n. And this is in Rd minus 1. And this explains why you would see a scaling of square root log n to the power d minus 1. Okay, so I claimed a few slides ago that we get variance asymptotics for the L-phase functional on the convex hull of a Gaussian polytope, and explicit limit VLD. So what is the formula? How do you find this formula? So go back to this picture here. On the right hand side, I put a score function. I design a score function here called psi. At each point, the score is 0 or 1. And it's 1 if the point is extreme, it's 0 otherwise. Or said differently, it's 1 if the point belongs to the thinned Poisson point process, and it's 0 otherwise. And this score function counts the number of extreme points in the right-hand picture. And it also has the property that it stabilizes. What does that mean? It means that if your point is at the origin, it means that the score function is determined completely by all the points in some random radius cylinder around the origin. So you put a cylinder in Rd minus 1 cross R of some radius depending upon the input, and that radius does not depend upon n here. It's a random radius. It has exponentially decaying tails, and therefore we can use the full theory of stabilization to say lots of things about sums of such score functions. So psi stabilizes, and to find the limiting variance asymptotics, one needs to integrate the two-point correlation function over all possible points, and this integral here converges because the two-point correlation function decays exponentially fast with the distance between the points. So this is a finite integral, and using the theory of stabilization, you can show that the limiting variance converges to this integral of the two-point correlation function. So, since this score function psi stabilizes, and since the rate of stabilization does not depend upon input n at all, the way it did in the Reitzner setup, We get another proof of the central limit theorem for all of these statistics. And the proof is more or less for free with the rate of convergence. And the rate of convergence involves some logarithmic factors which are probably can probably be dispensed with. And we may hear more about this in the next few days. Okay, so... No, we don't. Or I don't. Okay, so... I know you've worked on this with Matthew, but... So there's the limiting expression for the variance. Now, why are we calling the scaling boundaries Berger festoon? From where does this come? And so consider the stochastic Berger's equation with no viscosity term. It looks like this. So just to remind you, Berger's equation here, u, t of x is the velocity at time t at some position x. The inviscid Berger's equation takes the form here. And let's suppose that the initial condition is specified by some process eta, a Gaussian process eta, that has covariance decaying like 1 over log x for large x, and for small x has a Taylor expansion looking like this. So, and now let's take a Poisson point process on the product space RD minus 1 cross R with exponentially decaying intensity. So you don't see too many points near the ceiling. You see a lot of points near the floor, and you thin this out. You thin it out using translates of these parabolas y equals x squared over 2. So here are the points, a lot of points here, and you thin them out using translates like this. You push these translates down, and as soon as you touch points, you stop. So this, using translates of x squared over 2, you get a thinning of this Poisson point process. We've seen this before. And the thinning looks something like this. This green festoon, it represents what happens when you push the translates down into the point set. Okay. So now let's do the following. At each local max, that's to say, you do something like this. At each local max here, we put the parabola y equals minus x squared over 2. So you put... place the parabola y equals minus x, the apex of the parabola y equals minus x squared over 2 at the local max. And that gives you this blue graph. Okay, so this is a geometric construction. The blue graph I'm calling f. The derivative of f, the negative derivative of f, looks like this. And it was shown by Molchanov and collaborators in 1995, that for a fixed t, the limit velocity process, so u is the velocity, and after you scale the arguments by L squared, and you subject the initial condition to this strange scaling, the limit velocity process converges to exactly this sawtooth graph minus f prime. So that was shown in 1995. Well, this is very interesting. In their setup, they showed. I mean, a consequence of their results is that the local minimum of this green festoon corresponds to the shocks in the limit velocity process. So that's obvious, or that's clear, should be clear from the picture that the shocks correspond to the discontinuities of f prime. And those are exactly the local min of the green festoon. But we've seen this picture before. We saw it in connection with the Gaussian, the scaling limit of the Gaussian convex hull. We saw exactly this picture. And I mean, it's exactly the same picture. And in the Molchanov paper, it's also the consequence of their results that the local maximum of the green festoon correspond to the zeros of the limit velocity process. Well, that's also clear from this setup. But we saw that the zeros of the of this f prime function, the spacings of these zeros, correspond to the, in distribution, they correspond to the rescaled angular increments between the consecutive extreme points in the Gaussian convex hull. So the spacings between f prime correspond to the rescaled angular increments between the consecutive extreme points in the in the Gaussian convex hull. So we're getting the same picture for what looks like to be two unrelated problems. So just to say it like a third time, the rescaled angular increments between the consecutive extreme points in the Gaussian convex hull are behaving like the spacings between the zeros of this zero viscosity solution to the stochastic Burgers equation. So this suggests that there's something going on here which we need to understand. It suggests that the Gaussian convex hull the Gaussian convex hull has some stochastic PDE inside it, or is described by some stochastic PDE, which in the limit, in some limit, looks like a Burgers equation. So that the interface between the, you know, formed by the boundary of the convex hull of the Gaussian sample has some properties that are similar to those given by the solution to the inviscid Burgers equation with this stochastic input. So it's a subject of ongoing research, and well, thank you very much. I was saying that the methods that have been used are similar to the stabilization methods where they managed to localize the geometry of the convex hull, but the localization radius always depends upon the input size. And that's problematic when trying to work with variance asymptotics, for example.
Then you use the transformation.
Yep.
So, can you explain this?
Right. So, the previous methods for finding central limit theorems depended upon this localization procedure, whereby you show that the convex hull boundary is confined to some thin annulus, and you partition the annulus into small sets, and then show that the convex hull geometry becomes asymptotically independent as these sets go far apart. And the size of these sets depends upon n, the input size. So it's not stabilization. In stabilization, the size of your localization sets should be independent of n, independent of the input size. And using these characterizing paraboloids and transforming the picture into a picture of paraboloids in the product space, one can show that the geometry of the paraboloids localizes over regions which are independent of the input size.
Does the limiting Poisson point is always the same and the mapping is on the
The mapping only exactly. Right. The mapping depends upon N, and the picture that I showed is a picture of what happens in the limit as N goes to infinity. And in that picture, and which is this, one has paraboloids like this, and here's the origin. In this picture, which is the limit picture, the geometry of this paraboloid, of these paraboloids, localizes, meaning that is this point an apex of a characterizing parabola? Is it covered? Is this paraboloid covered by the union of the other paraboloids? Well, that question can be answered by looking at what happens in some radius R cylinder around that point, where R doesn't depend upon the input size. It cannot, because this is the limit picture. You have only one. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
In the point process of so-called lower tangent points, it's an interesting point process used in for stationary Boolean models. It's compact for me. Mm-hmm. But the definition is very similar.
Right.
And that's an interesting point process, first of all. And second, it has been analyzed by Bojanov and Stoyan back in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
They were able to come up with formulas for the second order properties.
So this is a point process given by a Boolean model on Poisson points in the upper half plane? Or?
No, it's a stationary setting with bounded brains. Mm-hmm. But the definition is still very similar. You have still mm-hmm.
I would think so.
And maybe it's interesting.
Yep.
At least this point process is interesting. It has been used also in spatial statistics
mm-hmm.
to get information on the intensity.
Okay. Let's thank Joe again.